हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. So we have Krishna's arriving in Hastinapur, and all the different Dhritarashtra says, you know, to receive Krishna in a very grand way. Bhishma Dev then, you know, says that this is nice, but you know, even that it could be even more. And then Duryodhana says, yes, he's so great, but at the same time, as you know, he is supporting our enemy and this and that. They are dependent upon him, so if we capture Krishna, then in that way we'll avoid the war and there'll be peace. And so Bhishma Dev gets very upset, and Dhritarashtra says nothing, and so then in this way the assembly ends. So then the next morning, after a pleasant night in Brikashtala, Krishna and Satyaki rose before dawn and began their morning worship. They then left the village at sunrise. In less than 2 hours, the fast-moving chariot approached the outskirts of Hastinapur. Crowds of people lined the roads for miles outside the city, hoping to see Krishna. Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, and other Kuru elders also came out to greet him. All of them were beautifully attired and filled with joy to see Krishna's approach. He entered the decorated city, surrounded by the people. Along the roads, Krishna saw archways and other structures decked with precious gems. From the balconies of the high white mansions along the road, ladies threw fragrant flowers onto his chariot. Many instruments played, and the blast from thousands of conch shells filled the air. The roads were packed with people, and Krishna dismounted from his chariot to pass through their midst. 50 tall and well-armed soldiers walked ahead of him to clear a path through the crowds. As he went along the smooth stone road, Krishna glanced about on all sides, smiling at the people. Loud shouts of Hail Govinda were heard everywhere. Slowly, Krishna made his way towards Dhritarashtra's home, consisting of numerous large palaces arranged around spacious gardens. Right, so gardens are a very important part we see in the Vedic culture, because you need the aesthetic aspect, you need the space. You know, people need to be able to go out and walk in nice environments, because the nice environments then refresh the mind and also elevate the mind. You know, these modern kind of cities where you pack more and more and more, and if possible, if you can get building rights to build in the park, you know, you do it, you know, and all these things. But in the Vedic, no, the parks stay. You need to do, then you expand out. And once you get to a particular point, the city's as big as it'll be. You make a new city. You don't keep expanding until you know you have Mega City 1 or something. He was led through the inner quarters, passing through a number of gates guarded by young warriors holding bows and spears. Krishna was brought directly to Dhritarashtra in the royal court, who immediately honored him with suitable words of praise. The king received him with the greatest respect and had him seated on a jeweled throne, no less opulent than his own. See, because Dhritarashtra knows he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but because he's not a devotee, it doesn't actually mean anything to him. You know, it's just like, okay, you know that this person is the president or prime minister or chancellor of a country, but to you it doesn't really mean anything, because in your life, what does he do in your life, right? You know, he doesn't make breakfast, he doesn't make the toast, he doesn't wash dishes or, you know, vacuum the rug. You know, you never see him, you never like this and that. So for him, there's no real meaning. He knows he's like this. He knows that there's karma and he's in control, but at the same time, he has so much material desire, and when he sees that his son keeping these material desires that are wrong is still going ahead and being successful, then he's thinking, oh, well, maybe we can just continue like that. Maybe Krishna thinks it's all right, or who knows? He doesn't care as long as he gets what he wants. So that's why he knows that, you know, by Shastra and by what he's heard, that he should be respecting Krishna. And he's doing it. But it's still, these are so that his material benefits will go better. He's not doing it out of actual worship of Krishna, because he as a person respects Krishna as a person. It's a matter of, he knows that you have to be respectful to demigods, and especially to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so by doing so, then he will be, he will get the benefits. And so his worship of the Lord is just part of his, you know, following of moral principles. It's not that worshiping the Lord is the main and moral principles support that worship. No, it's the other way around. The gain that he'll get from his moral principles is what his whole purpose is. And by worshiping the Lord, if that will enhance his moral principles and therefore his gain, then he's intelligent enough to do it. The two young maidservants stood on either side of the throne, fanning Krishna with chamara whisks. After Krishna had been worshipped with the traditional rites of hospitality, he stayed in the court for a short while. Engaging in formal and joking words with the Kurus, it was decided that there would be a full assembling the following day when they would hear Krishna's message. Taking Dhritarashtra's permission, Krishna then left the court and went to Vidura's house to see Kunti. So he's come long distance and all this, and so they don't just immediately walk in and then you have the thing. He walks in and he's received and everybody meets. And they, you know, exchange, you know, a few words and this and that and pleasantries and all that. And then it will be, you go and rest for some time. Rest, you'll have your meals, you know, you'll have your bath, all these different things. And then there'll be an appropriate time later that they'll have meat for the official purposes. And so in this occasion, then, since the court, the main thing of the court is in the morning, not in the afternoon. Therefore, then they decide, well, the next day. Like that. But otherwise, if it had been, you know, there was some other, they could consider, but then it throws off everything else in the day. Because the idea in the Vedic system, unless it's emergency, your lifestyle goes on. Right? Your life goes on. And there's no such thing as the occupation is more important than your lifestyle. One has to remember the occupation is to get the facilities to maintain the lifestyle. But in the modern culture, of course, then there's this false prestige put on the occupation, and then they think if I just do the occupation and get more and more stuff. But you have more and more stuff, more cars, more house, more this, more clothes, but when do you ever use it? So technically speaking, in the Vedic principle, that person is called a miser. He's a miser because he never actually uses the stuff. A miser is someone who has money but never uses it. So they can say, no, no, but I'm collecting more. But that's what misers do. They just collect more and more money and never use it. So here you're collecting money for taking care of family and your duties and your lifestyle. But it never, you can't use it because you're so busy making progress, so-called progress. It means social progress, and then you get old and then you're dead. And then what? The Vedic thing is no, take care, cultivate your life while you're there. Cultivate the relationship, elevate the consciousness, try to improve the quality of your consciousness. That's the real improvement. So if you have more money, and you can do more facilities, you can give in charity, you can do nice things, you know, live a comfortable life, great. But the main thing is about improving the consciousness. Well, now, then you have these things, you have the prestige, you have the money, and then at some point things change, the political mood changes, and then people don't care about your position anymore, or your money, or things, or because you never spend time with your family, then your family grows up and goes away. Like that, the children grow up, they disappear, they don't want to have anything to do with you, you didn't care about them, you're always busy with your work. And you know, other members of the family, then, you know, it's just everybody moves on. So what is actually gained? Though it's said, oh yeah, this is very fabulous, but in reality, So you see in the Vedic thing is that why would they do this kind of thing? They would live their lifestyle and then the next day they go. So even you can say, no, but a war is coming up. But even during the war is only from sunrise to sunset. They don't fight in between after that. Then you have to be able to go back, relax and everything, have your meals, you know, meet with friends, you know, have good rest, get up in the morning, do your morning worship and everything like that, then make yourself ready for the battle again. Because the whole point is this, you can say, is, oh, but this is not real. No, this is real. Modern stuff, that's just, you know, how you say, you know, snakes in a pit, you know, just trying to eat each other. It's nothing glorious. Before, the dignity, the things, because if you're not fresh, if you're not, then how do you fight properly? Because it's about the chivalry. What's the glory if I won the battle, but unfairly? You can say, well, I won. Yeah, amongst low-class people, then you can say, ha, 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 we won. But amongst those who are trying to elevate their consciousness, trying to come to a higher level of understanding, spiritual understanding of God consciousness, what is gained? Right? Because you gained that, yes, okay. You gained the throne, Duryodhana, and then after a few days, he's dead. And then what? And then how will be remembered? Oh, he was the jackass that did anything and destroyed the whole family and all his relatives and everything just to have the throne. So, where's the inspiration? You get no benefit. No one else gets benefit. No one's inspired. But you have a great personality. They're always talking about Yayati. They're talking about Bharat Maharaj and Rishabdev. And they talk about the Pandavas. Right? Always favorably. Duryodhana, it's never favorable. Vidura was overjoyed to see Krishna approaching his home. His eyes flooded with tears and he bowed at Krishna's feet. Krishna raised him up by the shoulders and embraced him with affection. Vidura gazed into Krishna's face. I cannot describe the joy I feel upon seeing you, he said. You are the inner soul of all embodied beings. I am honored beyond measure. And because Vidura is not the most wealthy of everybody, he's one of the most respectable. But as far as facility, he's, you know, it'd be more simple like that. As we saw before, they're putting up Krishna in Dushasana's palace, which is the most opulent of all the palaces, even more opulent than Duryodhana's. And so it's the best palace. That means it's also more opulent than Dhritarashtra's. You know, so they're thinking, you know, in that way, it's appropriate that they worship like that because God, everything belongs to him, so you want to give the nicest things for him. But at the same time, it's the devotion that's more important than the Lord. So even though he's staying at the one, he goes to visit Vidura. Vidura showed Krishna into his home and along with his wife, worshipped him with love. He asked after the Pandavas and Krishna told him all the news from Virat. Vidura was happy to hear that the Pandavas were well and that they had many allies. Krishna wanted to see Kunti at once. So Vidura showed him to her quarters. As he entered her room, Kunti stood up quickly and ran towards him. Remembering her son, she cried aloud. Then she clasped hold of Krishna's neck and shed tears. Krishna consoled her, and her tears gradually subsided. She brought Krishna into the room and sat him on a large couch spread with white silk. As she offered him argya, Krishna saw that his aunt had become emancipated through fasting and grieving. In one part of her spacious quarters, she saw Brahmins tending the sacrificial fire, their voices carrying through the room as they chanted mantras. A deity form of Vishnu stood on a large altar, beautifully dressed and decked with fresh garlands. Incense burnt on the altar, and its pleasant fragrance filled the room. Okay, so she's, you know, grieving in that, but at the same time, as she still does her worship and everything of the Lord and all that, that goes on. Because on the material platform, you can't always guarantee things will be great. But if you worship the Lord, that can always move forward nicely. Kunti had not seen Krishna since before her son's exile. Sitting near him on the couch, she poured out her lamentations. Her voice choked with sorrow. Tell me, how are my sons, O Keshava? Those pious boys, even from their childhood, were attached to serving their elders, were humble, kind, and always wished for each other's welfare. But they were robbed of their kingdom and sent to the forest. How cruel is fate! They have brought wrath and joy under control and are devoted to the Brahmins and are speakers of truth. Yet, abandoning their wealth and opulence, they lived in exile. This has ripped open my heart. How did they live in the forest, O Krishna? After living in palaces attended by numerous servants, how did they survive in the wild? Formerly, they would sleep on the best of beds in well-appointed rooms. How could they lay down on the bare earth? Alas, my children have suffered too much sorrow. Deprived of their father as young boys, they then had to leave their mother and all their friends and relatives. Right? Because she knows how they were living. Because we remember when in the house of Lak, then for 1 year, she was with them while they were in exile. And so how they lived as Brahmins and everything like that. But that was, they were still living in the city. I mean, for a short time they were in the forest, so she would have seen how they're living because she was there. Then they came to Ekachakra and they were living there nicely in the care of a Brahmin. Simple, but you know, it was taken care of. But now, and then they came back, they went to Drupad's kingdom and then won the hand of Draupadi in marriage. Then they came back, got half the kingdom, built Indraprastha and all that. But then they're sent to the forest like forest dwellers. Not, before they were just dressing like Brahmins, but now they're dressing like those of the forest without anything. And so she's lamenting because we see is that they've done all good everything. But they're not getting good material facilities. So she's saying, oh, fate is cruel, right? So there's, you know, how it all works, that one has to see. But the point is it won't get better by neglecting your duties. By performing your duties on the material platform, then prosperity comes. As you see, they'll get back the world. They'll be emperors of the world again. And Duryodhana, due to his, misapplied attachments, then he loses everything, and in fact, even life itself. You know, all his brothers, all his friends, everything. There's nothing left that's connected with him, like that. And so then you can see is that some things just take longer. You know, something you get an immediate, you know, like you drop a brick, then it hits your toe, you get immediate benefits, right? But certain things, they take a longer amount of time. You're doing something slowly, gradually, and then after years, then you get the results. Kunti lamented at length. She described each of her sons, her voice rising and falling in grief. Shall I ever see them again? She cried. O Achyuta, tell me how Draupadi is faring. She is dearer to me than all my sons. That noble lady preferred her husband's company to that of her father and sons. It seems one does not necessarily get happiness as a result of virtue. For she is the most virtuous of all women and yet has had to suffer unbearable misery. When I remember how she was dragged into the assembly, my heart feels such agony. Nothing has ever given me greater pain. Dragged by that dishonorable and covetous wretch, even as the Kurus looked on, she found no protector other than Vidura. The virtues of the high-souled Vidura are an ornament for this world. Right? So Vidura, then he spoke out, because others, they were quiet. He spoke and said this and that, but then Duryodhana, I'll just look at it, but you're not a king, what are you talking for? You know, you always support the Pandavas anyway, so of course you're going to babble like this, you know. And, you know, so that was the thing. So we see is naturally then Vidura also then took care of Kunti for all those years and that, so. Kunti's choked voice trailed off, and she sat weeping for some time. Krishna looked compassionately at her tear-streaked face. Even in old age, she was still beautiful, her fine features highlighted by her white widow's silk covering her head. She had not decorated herself since Pandu's death, but she still bore a regal splendor and was obviously noble. Right? So that beauty, that character and all that, it's all in the actual attitude of the individual. Just the modern thing of, yeah, be confident and you know, do what you want to do.
Yes, that will project some strength and all that, and it will impress some people in the way of on the platform of get some fruit of work and get some results. You know, and people may respect you or not bother you, but as far as being respected for being cultured or elevated, these kind of gains, those things all give. So we see his real beauty is coming from the particular consciousness that the living entity has. Higher the consciousness, the greater the beauty. Like that. Yes, so we'll see the continuation of our discussion. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada.